the studio is Rachel Davidson, and we're talking about her second book, The Truth of Her. So tell us, Rachel, about the relationship of Lyra and her brother, mm-hmm. and her relationship with her boyfriend, because this tells us a lot about the values, her values, but also it gives a great idea of how good a writer you are.
Oh, thank you. So Lyra, although she has 10 years difference between her elder brother James and herself, they actually are really, really close. So she, as I said, is extremely supportive of him through his journey towards his final end in the first book. So James actually, sort of for a 17-year-old bloke, actually is very reliant upon Lyra's steadiness and sense of calm and sense of acceptance around the process of death. Or dying, I should say, you know, the transition from one. And that's because Lyra is still very in touch with spirit, and she understands that it's a transition, and so she hasn't got the fears that James has, so she's a counterpoint to that. Okay, so then the second book, James has passed. Now Lyra's on the other side of that. And somebody who has been so pivotal to another soul now is now without them. So that slightly leaves her afloat. So she's coming to realise the sense of what a death will mean to the people left behind. Mm-hmm. Okay? Because, I mean, I like to think, my readers will correct me, but I like to think that I've painted the act of dying in a truthful way, in the sense of its transition and its potential beauty for those that go through it.
Yes. Tear-jerking, I would like to add.
I love it when I make people
cry. I speak from experience.
But the real tragedy is for those souls left behind on this earth, and how they cope with the loss of. I think that's the real tragedy of death. So I wanted to explore how Lyra's relationship minus her brother goes on. Now, of course, in reality, sorry, that's a misuse of the word reality. In the book's reality,
yes.
Lyra is still really very connected with spirit, and so she has the ability to receive messages from the spirit of James. And he does come regularly to support her, and there are other mystical beasts and magical elements that are there for her to support her, because one of the key spiritual messages that I want to get across in the writing is that we are never alone. Mm-hmm. We might feel like we are, but in reality, sorry again,
it's use of the word,
and my reality, my belief system, is that you are never alone. You simply need to be available and open and listening. So this is the story that Lyra has, really. But by the time you're 17 and she's gone through a lot of family issues, and she is weighted down by her mum and dad and their response to their grief and other things in their lives, by the time she's 17, she's sort of wanting to break free of that, and she's sort of trying to live a normal life. She doesn't necessarily believe in as much of that spiritual thing as she did. Mm-hmm. Which I think is a natural progression that we go through, the questioning, the recognition that if you're out there saying these sort of things when you're growing up, your peer group will criticise you. So it would have been an unnatural character for me to have written her that she had maintained that level of contact with spirit. So by the time she's 17, she knows in her soul that something's meant for her, but she hasn't got the capability or the patience to sit and be quiet with it, as I think a lot of teenagers are like. So she's out there looking for stuff, and that's when she meets Ronnie, who is her boyfriend. Mm-hmm. Now, whereas with her brother, she had she was more the grown-up, even though chronologically she wasn't. With Ronnie, she isn't so much in charge.
It's a very different relationship, isn't it?
So Lyra is a character that fundamentally has been in charge all the time, because she's so capable. She's got such learned knowledge that she can cope with the death of her brother and still, you know, be supporting her family, still be there. She's very, very strong. But she's beginning to tire of it and there's other forces that are coming to her that are sort of driving this emotional state. And then sort of temptation comes in. I mean, she's slightly looking for the temptation, but up until that point, everybody has been slightly disappointing, and she gets bored with them, or, you know, isn't getting the sense of that she wants out of relationships until Ronnie comes along. And Ronnie is a real turning point.
And she's very much the lightness, and he's very much the darkness, which is, yeah, is the emphasis, really, I suppose, or the epitome of what your book is.
Yes.
The story of the lightness and the darkness.
Well, again, because I wanted to really look into... I wanted to deal with the main theme, which was how to survive with life with grace and self-forgiveness. But I also wanted to sort of consider the aspect of, is darkness always bad? There's so much in our society that turns away from negative feelings. We're often very frightened of them, and we think that the solution is to pretend they're not there or ignore them. And I think that that's the manner in which they grow and they become bigger. So I really wanted to look at the idea of darkness. And when you start looking into the idea of darkness, you start to realise that a lot of growth comes from darkness.
Mm-hmm.
So analogies like, you plant a seed. Where do you plant a seed? You plant it in the darkness of the earth. Is that a bad thing? No, because the seed needs the darkness. It needs to be without light in order to germinate. And then obviously it begins the stretch for the light. And I put at the front of the book the quote from The Imitation of Christ, which is, a pure heart penetrates both heaven and hell, which is a little bit about like the as above, so below aspect of, in order to be a balanced soul in the universe, there has to be some darkness and there has to be some light. You can't just be all one way. I mean, you can, obviously, you can be one way or the other. But you will find that you do not have a sense of peace and fulfillment and grace that accepting both dark and light will give you. So I really wanted, it's one of the reasons why I wanted to put Lyra through what I put her through in this book, because she is a character of such light and confidence, and everybody loved her. The reader's feedback was that everybody wished that they could be that kind of stable, confident, knowing person. And I thought, well, I've got to change that. I've got to make her suffer.
I can't possibly let my character be happy.
Exactly. And there's another character in the book, second book, called Negredo. And Negredo is an alchemical term, and it is the process of burning and blackening everything. This is what the search for the Philosopher's Stone was about. And you would take things and take them down to their base level, blacken. Yeah, and in order to then build up to the Philosopher's Stone, which obviously in Harry Potter's term is about eternal life, but I have a different take on that. I mean, I do agree it's eternal life, but I don't think it's a ruby red stone, by the way. But so I wanted to take Lyra. I wanted to break her down, because in that breaking down, in that suffering, there is the other themes of. So free will and choice is a universal truth. That's great when life's going well. Everybody's, you know, cool with free will and choice, aren't they?
Yes.
But when life is really bad and you're faced with a terrible violation of your trust, then free will and choice become much harder, because you will face choices that can lead you down very dark paths. Or you can face choices that are still as tough, if not tougher, which will lead you down forgiveness and acceptance, yeah?
Mm-hmm.
Both of them not easy. So again, I wanted to explore how Lyra, starting as she does, from such a knowing, solid, capable position, how would a character like that cope with really being tested?
That's what you did.
So I enjoyed that.
Now, Lyra's relationship with her mother seems a stark contrast to her relationship with everyone else.
Mm.
So how was it that you, well, we know about Lyra now, you've talked about her, but how was it that she had such a different relationship with her mum? It's like she's the mum.
Yes. And in reality, for lots of reasons, some of which are painted in the first book just for a bit more context, but it is clear in the second book that Sophia has suffered a lot, and And Sophia is sort of exhausted, and she doesn't have the capabilities to really cope with everything that's gone on before James's death and then after James's death. So Sophia is slightly taking for granted the fact that her daughter is as capable as her daughter is.
Mm-hmm.
So in many regards, Lyra is mothering her mother. And in the first bit of the book, Lyra is still accepting that and getting on with it, and turning up and being strong when her mum is having weaker moments. But more than that, I mean, I don't know if I sort of wanted to slightly paint the middle child syndrome, because I do think this sort of dynamic happens a lot in families, where there is always sort of one child that is felt to be more capable, so doesn't get as much attention. And it's an extreme example that I paint with Lyra, but that's sort of the attitude, that her parents are so taken up in their grief and also their anger at one another, that they kind of just rely on the fact that she's always coped so far, so she'll always cope. Right, there is just that sort of, you know. So Lyra has, on the face of it, quite a difficult relationship with her mother, certainly by the time we get to her 17-year-old phase, in that she has learnt, don't bother to talk about her emotions, don't bother to put them out there, deal with it yourself. Mum will get over the top and emotional about things. Mum is so scared that I will leave, just like all of her others did. Yeah. So Lyra is in very much management mode of her mother. And Sophia, in her turn, is very frightened about losing another child. And there are many ways to lose a child, obviously. So her parenting skills have been electrocuted, and she's drawn back into her shell, really, and that's where she is. So Sophia's arc through the book is about actually coming back to the point of empowerment within herself, and again an acceptance of what has gone on before, but an ability to be there for others in a way that for that period of grieving she just wasn't able to be. So on the face of it, it is quite a sort of a combative, but they're going to go through very similar things. Lyra is very similar to her mother in many ways. Her mother's backstory contains lots of similar moments of loss that Lyra has. So in actual fact, they really should come together and talk about it openly and recognise that they both have suffered the same things, literally in the same,
yeah,
the loss of James. But the backstory to Sophia is she lost a brother too, you see. So not only, you know, she's got that in common.
Yeah.
But they're incapable of coming to talk to one another because of these barriers that have been built up.
Sophia's just so scared, isn't she?
Sophia is terrified.
Yeah.
She, you know, she's so worn out, and the story of her marriage to Darnell as well has also encouraged her to second guess her emotions. She's never sure about things, and it takes her a long, long time and a lot of support from another character in order to finally get to the point where she is able to say, "Now, hang on a minute, I'm feeling this. It is true," whereas before she would say, "Am I? I don't know. What do I do?" And she would second guess, and in the meantime, everybody's got sort of, you know, slightly annoyed and frustrated with her. So, and I really loved painting that picture of these two women who have so much in common and are just as strong as one another, really, in slightly different ways, and how sort of, you know, in battle they were. And how they couldn't, no matter how hard, get back easily towards one another until really tough stuff starts to happen.
Yes.
And then and only then did they find the capability just to be truthful.
You're a very talented writer.
Oh.
I've met a lot of writers. Tell me about the trees, animals and the shamanic aspect of this story, and how did the light and very dark aspects of writing Lyra affect you?
Okay, so the shamanic aspects of it, I mean, obviously there's themes that run throughout the book that have a shamanic influence. And so, you know, a shaman is somebody who is connected to spirit, usually through the natural world. So they deal with a lot of animals, plants, even rocks, yeah, even the geology as well. That's all part of the world of spirit. So I like to make that come to life in my version of shamanism anyway, because I'm obviously not a shaman, but I love that world. So I like to make it come to light by making those elements come to life and be characters in and of themselves. So we have lots of mystical beasts. The character of Marcham, who is very, very key to the character of James, is a unicorn. And everybody, when I say unicorn, sort of slightly imagines the Disney pretty pink rainbow Disney unicorn. And that's relevant for them, but it is not the truth of unicorns, in my humble opinion. So, because I believe that they are elemental and powerful, and that they have, you know, that what we talk about their attributes are elements of energy and spirit in motion. Yeah. So the tree, for instance, the oak tree is a critical element of the story. It was a sentinel for James. It gives access to the upper world, because in shamanism there is the idea of the lower, middle and upper planes that you can travel to in order to learn spiritual truths and aspects like that. So the tree still appears in this second book, because it is a place of solitude that Lyra goes to, and where she has great access. I don't describe it as this in the book, but if you think of it as like a portal, it's easier for her to meet with spirit and to gain certain understandings of why she is suffering, what she is suffering, and what her choices are. So she receives advice. And how did the light and darkness affect me? Well, I think somebody said to me, in writing the first book, I went through my own counselling to look at my fear of death, my own fear of death, and I think there's some truth in that. And in the second book, I think I've probably looked at the issue of anger and dark feelings, and come to some greater acceptance around what those mean to me. So I'm probably still as nutty as I was before I started the book.
Beautifully put, Rachel.
But I think actually, you know, being comfortable with one's anger, acknowledging that it exists and that it has a message for you, is actually a really important part of maturing and getting to a point where you're not so affected by the anger, so that when it does pop up, it doesn't control you quite so much. It can inform you. And Lyra's anger, and many of her other dark emotions, is a very powerful force and very persistent. And she has to fight very hard for it not to take over her life. And that, how did it affect me writing it? I mean, I loved that. I think the Wood Witch, who is the darkest... Yes, I think she's the darkest character in the book. I love diving into her and making her as horrible and as evil and as rancid as possible.
We've come up to the part of the show. I don't normally give this part of the show to people, but Rachel's very special. So I'd like you, if you wouldn't mind, reading a couple of minutes of it, if you'd like to. So off you go.
Okay, so it was really hard to pick a particular excerpt, but I hope I've got a good one for you guys. This is the first bit of chapter 5. So Lyra is still 7 years old, and it's just after her brother's. Well, I'll start it. Here we go. The day of the funeral arrives with predictable gloom and drizzle. It is an unseasonably cold late September day. The cloud hangs low in the still air, tinged with a dark and ominous grey, and a lazy float of the lightest rain. Lyra observes the melancholy scene, the black hearse cutting through the gloom as it approaches the barn's front door, creeping respectfully down the gravel drive. The turn of the hearse's wheels barely makes a sound as it approaches. It is as if the tyres of the vehicle are speaking in hushed and whispered tones. It seems that the low cloud has a similar intention, to quieten the world for this ceremony to pass. For the world does indeed feel blanketed since James has died. No, perhaps it is more accurate to call it shrouded. The world feels to Lyra as if it has been covered from head to toe in tight grey cloth, suffocating all of them into a remote numbness and an autonomic procession towards this day, the day of James's funeral, the official ritual of goodbye. Lyra does not want to say goodbye. Her childish heart is cut with the awful realizations that have assaulted her in the intervening period. Realizations such as how hard she will have to work in order to keep the memory of James's voice within her ears. How before she'd never really bothered to think about what the feeling of lonely was, but now she knows it. The family is unbalanced now. She is unbalanced now. At her core, a fear is beginning to grow. Its full shape and name is obscured, merely a seed in these early transitional days. The fear is like everything else in Lyra's life at that moment, merely a whisper. But it is busy, stitching away at her heart in threads of blood red. Threads of fear that question what role Lyra will play now, now that she has lost her brother, now that she is an only child, now that she is responsible for her mum and dad.
That's lovely. Don't set me up, honestly, please. give us an idea where people can get hold of your books and if they want to find out more about you as a writer as well, please.
Okay, easiest place to go and find the books is Amazon. It's available in an ebook and paperback format. If you want to find out more about me, then my website is a good place to start. That's racheldavidsonauthor.com. I'm also on social media with the same tag name, so Rachel Davidson Author on Facebook and Instagram. Those are the places I spend a lot of my time promoting away.
Thank you so much for being
Sarah,
on the show
again.
And I know it's probably your sort of half a dozen time or something on the show, but it's getting on for that. But you're welcome anytime.
I love coming, as you can tell.
Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Hopefully we'll see you very soon.
Yes, please. Thanks, Sarah.